Accession number 18569, Reel 5.
Colonel May, Reel 5. Did you have anything to do with the stopping of illegal immigrants coming into Palestine?
When we were in Haifa, we did get it. I didn't get involved in that, but as a battalion we did. And I seem to remember Sidney Jay, who you know, he got involved in one on one occasion. I seem to remember he had a £7 tin of bully beef thrown at him.
Any other memories of Palestine that we should record before we leave it?
Not at Palestine, but we moved from Palestine to Egypt and were in Moasca while we were waiting for a ship to come back to the UK.
Is this 47?
This was in 47, yes. This was in late October 47. And we were in a wired-in camp, and not only was there barbed wire around it, but I think we had something like a night guard of 30 sentries, something like that, to stop pilfering. Didn't stop pilfering. I mean, there was one night I can remember that we soldiers were sleeping in tents, and when they woke up in the morning, there was the top of the tent and their beds and them, and everything else had been nicked. And it was a triple dannet fence, and the sentries had orders to shoot to kill. It was a sidelined into the skill of the local inhabitants.
Where was your next active service?
I joined the parachute regiment and joined one para in Germany.
Which year is this?
That was in 48. I joined them towards the end of August 48. In Lübeck, and we went and we drove from Lübeck to Grafenwöhr on the Czech border for an exercise, and we did an exercise as part of the American Big Red One Division.
Why did you want to join the parachute regiment?
Because my own regiment, the battalion, the one battalion left of my own regiment, was doing a recruit training job on Salisbury Plain. And having been adjutant, I wasn't terribly enamoured of going to be a platoon commander doing that.
So was it better in the parachute regiment in the event?
So I became a rifle platoon commander in one para. But that was, it was new and it was interesting. I'd say that the first thing we did after I'd arrived in one para, we went and did this exercise with the American First Division. And I shall always remember they commented on us. They said, every time we see you, you're always either eating or sleeping or digging. And I didn't reckon they could have paid us a higher compliment. There, I don't think I ever saw them dig so that more than their foot was in the slip trench. I don't think they ever covered the ankle. And I remember, I think they probably had good cause to be worried. I mean, we did a battalion attack with six bayonets. They didn't wait for us to arrive. Probably a good, just as well they didn't. But we then, having driven from Lübeck down to Grafenwöhr, which took us about 3 days, we didn't go back to Lübeck, we went back to Brunswick. And the battalion had moved, because of course we had no families in those days. The battalion had moved from Lübeck to Brunswick.
So did you see active service with 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment?
Well, I suppose we deployed. I mean, we came back to England and went to Aldershot, because when we first went to Aldershot, we then moved over Whitsons in a hurry to Cyprus, because we thought we were going to have to intervene in Iran over the oil fields. And we had to be retrained using Hastings aircraft, which was double door jumping as opposed to single door Decatur jumping. And so that had been done in a hurry. And the whole brigade group moved by sea. I think at about a week's notice, which included the retraining, double door jumping, to Cyprus. And while we were in Cyprus, we trained quite hard. We were then moved again at short notice. And we were recalled in the middle of on the ninth day of a 10-day exercise. The whole brigade was on a brigade exercise. We were called on the ninth day, put at 48 hours notice, which was then reduced to 24 hours notice, but nobody was allowed to know other than the CO, quartermaster, adjutant, and I was by then adjutant of one para. And then that was reduced to 12 hours notice. And as it was reduced to 12 hours notice, 47 transport aircraft started landing at Nicosia airfield. We got our aircraft allocation at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we took off at 7. And we were allowed to take with us 6 jeeps, 10 hundred weight trailers, 1,000 pounds weight of stores, and we had to take with us our cooking kit, mortars, medium machine guns, and well, that was it. And soldiers were allowed to take their large pack, and we arrived. sort of mid-afternoon, we were told, you can draw your tentage tomorrow. You will erect your camp near the ordnance sheds at Geneva. You are to be a Lorried Infantry Battalion, fully trained in cross-desert operations with tanks and aircraft. Write your own establishment. Draw your kit from Tel El Kebir. And you've got 10 days to be fully operational. And the kit we were drawing was what had been handed in by 6th Airborne Division when they left Palestine. And very shortly after that, we were deployed, dug in opposite the Egyptians at Kilo 125 on the road to Cairo. And as a battalion, we were due to take Gezira Island, and the independent company, who mustered 23 bayonets, were to take, trying to think of the name of the Cairo airport, the whole airport. We were going to be a bit pushed.
Which year was this?
51. And we moved more troops into Egypt than we deployed to the Gulf, and we had considerably more casualties. But it didn't rate a general service, a bar to the general service medal. So I don't know whether you've called it operations or not. But I mean, we did one complete brigade operation because there was a water filtration plant that had been cut off and been a number of casualties, and we had to clear the opposition from around it.
How much opposition was there?
Oh, nobody argued with us, but we had we made sure that the opposition had gone, and therefore the water filtration plant was relieved, and we blew up a number of houses which dominated things, so that actually, you know, they weren't being overlooked. But I mean, there was a certain amount in, I think it was the Ismailia Cemetery, and a chap I was at school with, who was a platoon commander in one of the other battalions, was killed there.
So this was general Egyptian opposition to, or harassment of, the British position in the Canal Zone.
There'd been rioting, and there was a sort of pitched battle actually in the Caracol in Ismailia, and in fact, I mean, I think the police there had a number of casualties. Certainly the building was shelled by one of our tanks, and I think the Lancashire Fusiliers had about 10 or 15 casualties storming the building. And we certainly deployed as a brigade group two or three times to Kilo 125. In fact, I mean, we were at Kilo 125 when King George the Sixth died, and we had a brigade group drumhead service under arms in the desert. And when I say under arms, you know, with each platoon with its AK-AK Bren, with 1-in-3 tracer and 20-something magazines, which must be fairly unique.
Well, the King died in February 1952.
Yes.
What's the caracol?
It was a police headquarters building, as far as I can remember. We weren't actually involved in that, because I think we moved a complete division from the United Kingdom. We had moved the Para Brigade and the Ordinary Garrison Brigade from Cyprus. We'd moved a brigade or a division, I can't remember which, from Libya. And there was already, I think, a division in Egypt. That was quite a concentration.
So you were in the canal zone from in 51-52?
I was in the canal zone 51-52, yes.
And your job with the 1st Battalion?
Well, I was a platoon commander to start with. Then I became signals officer and spent a year and a half as signals officer, and then about 6 months as adjutant. I was adjutant when we moved to the canal zone.
How did the battalion like being in the canal zone?
They went there in a hurry, at about a week's notice at Whitsun, and they stayed there for, I think, 3 years. But I think towards the end, they were allowed some families.
Did you see any other active service with One Para?
No, because I then left One Para and went back to 1st Royal Hampshire's. And the chap I'd taken over from as adjutant was doing adjutant. And I went back to do the job of transport officer, which I'd done in Cyrenaica as a captain. Went back to do it in Germany as a subaltern 6 years later.
So you rejoined the 1st Royal Hampshires in
1952? In the spring of 52. Because driving up to join the battalion, I went up one of the roads we'd gone up, or the road we'd gone up on the way to Bremen's during the war. And I can remember stopping at about 11 o'clock in the morning to do what one needed to do at that time in the morning, in the middle of a journey. And as I stopped, I thought, well, I'm dead. This is familiar. And I was heading for a clump of bushes, so you can just imagine what, and I suddenly thought, I was here during the war. I can remember throwing three mines into the ditch here. I think I'm going to find another clump of bushes. Wouldn't it be stupid if I now stood on one of the mines that I threw in here? But not a terribly important thing, but it was amusing.
And any active service with the Hampshires in the 50s?
What did we do? No, not then. Because I went from the 1st Battalion, I went to our depot. The battalion at the time was, most of the time I was there, was in Malaya as part of the emergency there. And so one was busy trying to turn national service and regular recruits into combat soldiers and trying to persuade them on Farley Mount, just outside Winchester, in the middle of the summer, that in 12 weeks' time they were going to be as much at war as anybody's been. They found it rather difficult to understand. So that was a couple of years. As part of the time I was training officer, part of the time I was adjutant.
But you didn't go out to Malaya yourself?
No, I wasn't allowed to go there because one was doing this training job.
Now, you were telling me earlier, off the record, that you were involved with relief work in Belize.
Yes.
In 1961 with the
yep.
battalion. Can you tell me how that came about, please?
Yes. After Winchester, I went to the Staff College. From there to do the job of Brigade Major of the TA Para Brigade. And then, because I was only a temporary major then, if I had gone back to my regiment after the normal two-year tour, I would have gone back as a captain. And because of the Manning state at the time, I would have been a platoon commander as a captain. So I managed to stay with the TA Para Brigade for 3 years, by which time I had just become a substantive major. And I went back to the regiment as the junior company commander to command the reserve company in Jamaica. And in fact, in 1960, unfortunately, I had a couple of my soldiers killed and two wounded in Jamaica. We got involved with some American guns for hire, ex-American Marines, who were training Rastafarians in the hills above Kingston. And there was a misunderstanding with the military and the special branch. And I was deployed as a cordon. And we thought we had got these chaps inside our cordon. In fact, they were outside our cordon. Special branch were running around in civilian clothes, armed. These two chaps in civilian clothes and armed came up behind my soldiers and shot four of my soldiers at about 2 or 3 feet range. Two were killed, two were wounded, because they were outside our cordon. And my soldiers had mistaken them for special branch.
But why did they open fire on your soldiers?
Well, because we were after them. They had already killed one or two Rastafarians. I mean, we were armed, we had live ammunition with us, but we hadn't got, our weapons weren't loaded because we weren't expecting to be involved in a shooting.
So these were two Americans,
two ex-American Marines, who were guns for hire terrorists.
So they were training the Rastafarians.
They were training the Rastafarians.
Why did the Rastafarians want to be trained in arms?
I'm not sure.
And was it
it was the run-up to independence of Jamaica. The Jamaicans were always talking about freedom. Why the Rastafarians particularly? I think they were hoping to, once there was freedom in Jamaica, to be a bigger pebble on the beach, or the biggest pebble on the beach.
But who shot your men? Were they Rastafarians?
These Americans. In fact, we thought we'd got them cornered later on in a cave, and I wasn't prepared to risk any of my soldiers going into the cave, and we used a rocket launcher in the cave. Unfortunately, they weren't there. But about 6 weeks, 2 months later, they were in fact picked up, and they were both hung.
Whereabouts in Jamaica did this incident occur where they shot your men?
In the hills just above and to the west of, above and slightly to the west of Kingston.
And this was in 1960?
This was in 1960, yes. I regret to say those were the only two British servicemen killed on active service or in operations in 1960.
It seems rather bold of these two to take on your men in a way.
Well, they were outside our cordon. I mean, they got clean away then.
What was the demeanour of the Rastafarians in Jamaica at that time?
Other than that, not too bad, really. Just after we left, just after independence, Haile Selassie visited Jamaica, and there was the Jamaica Regiment produced a guard of honour, all in scarlet tunics and all the rest of it. And they were rushed by the Rastafarians because, of course, Haile Selassie is their sort of god almost. And complete with red tunics, they had to come from the present straight to the on guard with fixed bayonets. Which again must be a fair...